In 1974, an unlikely scene unfolded. Physicists Fred Allen Wolf and Jack Sarfatti met with Werner Erhard, founder of the controversial EST movement. Despite Sarfatti bluntly calling Erhard an asshole, Erhard embraced him and promised funding. Soon, thousands of dollars flowed to support quantum physics research that mainstream institutions wouldn't touch. This unusual alliance would help spark a scientific renaissance that transformed our understanding of reality itself. While conventional physics departments had become dominated by a shut-up-and-calculate mentality, a ragtag group of physicists, many unemployed due to the post-Apollo job crash, formed the Fundamental Physics Group in Berkeley. They dared to ask the philosophical questions their mentors had abandoned. What does quantum mechanics actually mean about reality? Could consciousness play a role in quantum effects? Their explorations of quantum weirdness would eventually lead to technologies we now consider essential to our digital future, including quantum encryption and computing. Quantum mechanics began as a philosophical pursuit by thinkers exploring fundamental questions about reality. Niels Bohr adopted the yin-yang symbol to represent complementarity, the notion that quantum objects require contradictory descriptions. Erwin Schrödinger, influenced by Eastern mysticism, created his famous cat paradox to highlight quantum absurdity. Einstein, though skeptical, engaged deeply with the philosophical implications, objecting to spooky action at a distance. These pioneers formed a close intellectual community, exchanging visits and letters, debating the meaning behind the mathematics. Their extensive correspondence documents their struggle to interpret the strange quantum formalism. Early quantum textbooks included philosophical chapters, with graduate exams requiring interpretive essays. World War II transformed everything. Fascism scattered European physicists, while wartime projects changed their working methods. Recruited for military technologies like radar and atomic weapons, physicists learned to prioritize numerical results over interpretation. The Cold War reinforced this approach as defense agencies became physics' primary funders, viewing physicists as a technical workforce to be stockpiled for America's needs. John Bell, a CERN physicist with private doubts about quantum mechanics, was troubled by the Copenhagen interpretation's emphasis on measurement. In 1964, he published a theorem proving no local hidden variable theory could reproduce quantum mechanical predictions. His analysis revealed either quantum mechanics was wrong, or the world was fundamentally non-local, with particles influencing each other instantaneously across any distance. Despite its profound implications, Bell's paper remained unnoticed for 4 years. Eventually, nearly three-quarters of early papers on Bell's theorem came from the United States, primarily from Berkeley's Fundamental Physics Group, who recognized Bell's theorem forced a choice between quantum mechanics and locality. John Clauser discovered Bell's paper while browsing journals as a Columbia graduate student. When his thesis advisor rebuffed his interest in testing it, Clauser lost his office space. Despite employment challenges, he secured a position at Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory and built his apparatus from scavenged parts. In 1972, he published the first experimental results testing Bell's theorem, which confirmed quantum mechanics rather than toppling it as he'd hoped. By May 1975, the Fundamental Physics Group formed when Elizabeth Rauscher secured a weekly reservation in Ernest O. Lawrence's former Berkeley lab office. As one of the few women in physics, women earned only 2% of physics PhDs nationally, Rauscher faced threats and sabotaged lab work, yet recognized the importance of Clauser's experiments and founded discussion groups exploring science-society connections. Key members included Saul Paul Sarag, a physics dropout who left for theater, Nick Herbert, an engineering physics PhD from Stanford, and Henry Stapp, a senior Berkeley physicist who had studied with quantum pioneers. Their interests expanded beyond Bell's theorem to parapsychological phenomena like ESP, which they believed quantum non-locality might explain. Operating outside academia required both intellectual freedom and financial backing. Arthur Young, inventor of the first commercially licensed helicopter, became an early patron by establishing Berkeley's Institute for the Study of Consciousness. Toy manufacturer Henry Dakin offered his San Francisco house for expanded meetings that included computer programmers, EEG specialists, and electronic music pioneers. Their most significant patron was Werner Erhard, whose best seminars had already earned millions. After meeting Wolf and Sarfati in Paris, Erhard funded their Physics Consciousness Research Group, driven by his lifelong fascination with physics. Princeton Nobel laureate Eugene Wigner proposed consciousness plays a central role in quantum mechanics through his Wigner's Friend thought experiment. John Wheeler developed similar ideas about a participatory universe, while Jack Sarfati suggested quantum entanglement might explain telepathic phenomena. The Fundamental Physics Group pioneered 1970s physics books connecting quantum concepts with Eastern mysticism. Fritjof Capra's The Tao of Physics, 1975, became the most successful example, embraced by many physicists to improve physics' public image during anti-scientific sentiment. Physics educators incorporated these ideas into curricula, with David Harrison developing a Zanna physics course where students distinguished between quotes from physicists and mystics. Though exploring quantum entanglement in relation to parapsychology placed them outside mainstream physics, established scientists engaged with their ideas. John Bell refused to dismiss connections between parapsychology and quantum entanglement. Nobel laureate Eugene Wigner supported Elizabeth Rauscher's quantum explanations for remote viewing, while fellow Nobel winner Brian Josephson embraced Eastern mysticism and parapsychology after receiving his prize. Nick Herbert explored Bell's theorem's practical applications, designing devices for superluminal telegraphy in 1978 that used entangled particles to transmit messages faster than light, a concept with paradoxical implications like receiving messages before sending them. Herbert's flash, first laser-amplified superluminal hookup, puzzled leading physicists until Wojciech Zurek identified the no-cloning theorem, which established the impossibility of perfectly copying unknown quantum states. Though superluminal communication proved impossible, this limitation led to quantum encryption. Bennett and Brossard's 1984 BB84 protocol for quantum key distribution uses photon polarization states to create shared secret keys that reveal eavesdropping. This technology has progressed to practical applications in banking and voting, with demonstrations through fiber optic cables up to 115 miles and through open air for nearly 100 miles, sufficient for satellite communication. The Fundamental Physics Group disbanded in early 1979 after nearly 4 years. Members followed different paths. Jack Sarfati found conservative patrons. Saul Paul Surag became a night watchman studying physics during shifts. Nick Herbert's Quantum Reality, 1985, sold over 100,000 copies, and Elizabeth Rauscher founded a laboratory securing naval contracts. Their influence revitalized physics education, bringing conceptual understanding back to doctoral exams and interpretive discussions to quantum mechanics textbooks. After physics funding collapsed again in the 1990s, institutions like the Perimeter Institute emerged to support foundational research outside mainstream channels. What began as fringe exploration entered scientific orthodoxy. Leading physicists now study consciousness and quantum brain processes, building on Henry Stapp's work. Quantum computing and encryption technologies, rooted in the quantum weirdness these physicists championed, have become billion-dollar industries. When you use quantum-secured messages or hear about quantum computing breakthroughs, remember these unlikely rebels who preserved quantum philosophy when the establishment had abandoned it. Those at the margins often see beyond current limitations and transform our understanding of reality.